I'm here to talk about my experience with living in very small spaces, some of them smaller, in fact, most of them smaller than some people's closets. Very happy to be here. I've seen a lot of product and tight pants around. I like it. I was just in Toledo last night until I was doing a lecture there until like 9, so you can imagine the kind of schedule I've had. But what was really encouraging about Toledo is that we had over 600 people show up just to hear me rant about tiny houses. And really, there's not much. I could stop at tiny houses. Small houses are more efficient. Period. Okay, it's over. We can leave now. Because that really says it all in my book anyway. But I can elaborate on that a bit. It was back in 1997 when I first decided to live, or basically escape the rent mortgage problem, the trap that I see a lot of people falling into. I know that my parents, for example, bought a 4,000 square foot house because, as they would say, it's a trophy house. They were admittedly trying to show off. But while they were trying to show off, I had to clean the place along with my sister, and was jealous of the kids with smaller houses who could play on the weekends instead of vacuum. So in 97, I moved out. Well, my lease ran out on an apartment. I just decided I was not going to start paying rent again. So I moved out of that place, not knowing what I was going to do exactly, and stumbled into this $2,000 Airstream trailer, totally trashed on the inside. Lime green Formica countertops, orange shag carpeting, which might be interesting in a retro way if it wasn't all like sun bleached and covered with cat litter and a dead bird. But yeah, it was about as. But it was perfect because I could rip everything out without caring about it. So I spent a few months living very rustically, squatting in the apartment building where I had been because I had a key to the basement. So I'd roll up all my stuff at night or in the afternoon, so nobody would know I was living there. I think everybody knew I was living there, but they were very generous people. And I ultimately spent that winter fixing up this little Airstream of 14 feet and started this experiment in living very small and simply. The hardest part for me, and I think a lot of people, how do I get this thing to change? I guess if I go down here, this is always my... You people at this conference are probably all technically savvy. I am totally not. But there we go. The hardest part about living simply for me has been the first step. The first step to living simply was deciding what I needed to be happy and getting rid of all the extra crap. And that actually took a couple of years for me because, like most people, I have a special attachment to certain things. Like for me, it was books and a few pieces of art on my walls. I could not justify getting rid of that stuff for a while. It turned out to be a bit of idolatry on my part, just like holding these things as they were like symbols of what I wanted to achieve in life or of my own identity, you know. I'm a smart person, I have books. Or I'm an art major, here are my paintings on the wall. But ultimately decided to, I thought living artfully rather than having a lot of art to store would probably be a better bet. And it has worked out really well for me. In that process of deciding what I needed to be happy, I did decide that I needed insulation in my walls. So after 2 years of living in this Airstream trailer in Iowa and scraping ice off the inside of the walls during the winter, I did finally... I finally decided to build my own space with some insulation in it. And before I show you a picture of that, I just want to talk a little bit more about my reasons, which are, I think, pretty universal reasons for a lot of people in the small house vein. Besides just wanting to be liberated from the mortgage rent thing, which is a great reason on its own, I was also into the idea that a smaller space would be way more sustainable, environmentally speaking. So, you know, like the average American house puts out 18 tons worth of greenhouse gases per year and puts another 7 tons worth of construction waste into the local landfill. And before you even get in the front door, like the average lawnmower puts out more greenhouse gases in like an hour or two than your average car driving to New York City from the Midwest. So you can imagine, it just goes on and on, and I did not want to contribute to that any more than I had to. So by living smaller, I would literally have a smaller footprint. And along these lines, I think it's interesting that everything is green these days. You know, I was in my hotel room recently, hotel room in Portland, of all places, very green place, and there was a bottle of Fiji water on the next to the sink, and it had this tag that said, "This is the sustainable option." And it was sitting right next to the tap water that was obviously local. I would hope, anyway, they weren't sending that in from Fiji. I didn't even read it, but everything is supposed to be green these days, and so few things are, because green is really, at its best, I think, a subtractive process, not adding more solar panels or more insulation necessarily. While those things can be good, that as the be-all, end-all, is those are more like afterthoughts. Design efficiently, build only what you need, and you're going to be way better off overall. That's my philosophy, anyway. Another part of this was really, in my view, it was a bit of civil disobedience, because once I found out it was illegal to live in a small house, that's when I really decided I had to live in a small house. It's like, I guess the housing industry makes up some rules that are applied to building codes at the local level and at the state level. Those codes dictate how much house we have to buy, which is a very interesting scenario. And the insurance industry gets in there, too, and a lot of other corporate America institutions get in there and propose these rules that dictate how much house we need, which pretty much dictates how much of everything we need when you consider more house means more trips to IKEA, means more stops at the gas station, and yada, yada, yada. It just goes on and on. Once you have a lot of house, you have a lot of needs for a lot of extra stuff. I should probably make it clear right now that I do not believe everybody should live in 100 square feet. This is a picture of my house. And I don't think everybody is cut out for 100 square feet, but it is an option that a lot of people go for, and a lot of people are happy that way. I always just say any house in which all the square footage is being used is a small house. So if you need 4,000 square feet as a single person to be happy, it's like, whatever. Go ahead, if that makes you happy. Though I really doubt that having so many 4,000 and 5,000 and 6,000 square foot houses is really making a lot of people happy. Oddly enough, they turn into something more like debtor's prisons. It's like the idolatry thing again. The symbol is almost the opposite of what it really is. So a McMansion symbolizing luxury really is a debtor's prison for a lot of folks anyway. Here's a picture of the inside of that first house. Along the lines of, you know, civil disobedience, there are building codes that say you can't live very small. To get around those, I put the house on wheels, so you don't have to go by building codes if you're not building a building. It's a vehicle. That way I could build as small as I wanted to. Another interesting category of rules and laws is the zoning laws that most of us live under if we live in populated areas. Those dictate how you can use a structure in a given area. And much to my dismay, once I'd finished getting around the building codes by putting my house on wheels, it turns out you can't just park your travel trailer on any old residential lot and live there in town. So I was talking to the city of Iowa City at that time about options, and they did mention that while you can't just live on a residential lot in a trailer, you can park your RV in your own yard, and you can camp out in your own yard as much as you want. So it just so happened that the cheapest house in town was up for sale. It was $50,000, totally dilapidated. Bought that structure, rented it out to a friend, and then camped out in my own backyard for 5 years. And as long as I called it camping out, it went just fine. These are all just pictures of the inside of that structure as it sat in the backyard in Iowa City. There's the loft. Now, there's the house sitting in Iowa City. I like to show that picture to show that tiny houses are good in inclement weather. Actually, they're better because they're really easy to heat and to cool. I know you guys down here in Austin do need to cool things occasionally. How many people here are actually from Austin? I guess there are quite a few. I thought it was just like this influx of tourists and South by Southwest people like myself. So this is a picture of my house in the backyard as badly photoshopped on the turbulent flight over here because I wanted to light up the windows. So if you look closely, you can see every bump that I hit on the plane ride from Charlotte this morning. Another pet peeve of mine when it comes to building code and zoning is mandatory street widths. Another, what I like to call, mandatory consumption laws. They basically prescribe how much we have to spend on infrastructure. And this is an example of something which would be the opposite of what we typically see in suburban America. In suburban America, you sometimes get these 50-foot wide streets, and the way we got those is the same way we get a lot of other stuff. For one thing, it's revenue-based. It makes great money for the municipalities. But another part of it is really weird absence of common sense stuff, like usually fear-based. During the Cold War era, that's when the suburbs were originally started to be built. And it was decided that every street should be wide enough for two fire trucks to pass in opposite directions at 55 miles an hour on a curve. So they had to be very wide, and that's the way it was decided that all of these streets were going to be like 50 feet wide. I far prefer the narrow, like these windy narrow things, European style. This is actually the Europe of the Americas, Quebec City up in Canada. Couldn't afford to get to Europe at the time, so I took my pictures up there. This is actually an example of what happens when you do create intimate spaces that are human scaled. People, psychologically, it turns out we really do prefer a sense of containment overall. I guess there are some folks out there who actually might like that sense of the abyss that you get when you're in the suburbs and it feels like there's a house over there and there's a house over there. But mostly we like a sense of containment and vitality. Toronto, where I just came from. Sorry if you're from there, but I gotta say, in this hotel district, the opposite of this. Huge, overbuilt streets. It's very sad. It's kind of, you know, it's very related to Detroit and the economic downturn that we've had recently. And so it's like, I felt like it was, I think I was the only one in like five city blocks in this overbuilt environment with all these hotel rooms and huge streets. And no restaurants, by the way. It's very odd. See, like down here, I like this. We just walked over here. It's great. My stylist, Steve Weisman. He's actually my business partner, but we figured if we called him my stylist, he might have more clout. Trying to get in here and all, you know. Back to that economic downturn. You know, I don't have to say too much about what has happened other than the fact that I think one of the primary consequences of the downturn has been totally ignored by the, or almost completely ignored by the media, which is interesting that our banks, well, for one thing, the laws themselves, laws that actually mandate larger houses have failed us. We build all these huge houses and now nobody can afford them. People get kicked out of them. Totally overbuilt stuff. And then, beyond that, the banks echo the same sentiment by creating these rules that only allow for large house loans. They got to have so many bedrooms, so many bathrooms in order to get a loan easily. And then people can't afford the houses that they've been given. Some people have been actually forced into more house than they could afford. So in the end, all of us in the States wind up bailing out the banks for the mistakes they've made and perpetuating the same system with no change. So that's when I started getting pissed off. When the bailout came along, I was like, gloves are off. Time to, you know, the bank, as far as I'm concerned, the banks aren't entirely free to do whatever they want anymore, even as private entities. Not if they're getting my bailout money. This is an idea I've been working on for like over a decade. When I have to do laundry or pay my bills, or do anything I should be doing, I instead sit down and design tiny house villages. So I've got like hundreds of little pieces of paper with tiny house site plans on them for villages of different kinds. I've got my trailer park zoning, I've got my cottage housing zoning, all sorts of ways. I've been bracing for whatever the county said with regards to what I couldn't do. So I went into the county about 2 weeks ago. Finally, I've been like totally imagining the fight I would have with the county and how I was going to take them to task with the press and all to fight for sustainable housing. And I went in there and they're like, this is so cool. We got to break this law and this law. We got to get a variance here and there. And we got to create a trailer park that is actually affordable, but attractive and sustainable. So it turns out that all of this conflict was really in my head and imagined. But it's good because it got my energy level up. The anger is a good thing as long as it's not controlling you, I suppose. But I designed this on Napoleon Complex. That's actually Steve's idea. It makes up for some of his other bad name ideas. Never did life enough co. But this was genius. And then I used the subtitle Co-Housing for the Antisocial because that's me. I've lived in very private areas like the suburbs, which are not really designed for people but for cars. That's their intention. They actually were designed to consume, to propel consumption and therefore the economy. And I've also lived in very non-private areas, like all about community. I live in Sonoma County, that's totally Cali of me to say. Sonoma County, California, where there are plenty of hippie communes to be found still to this day. And I wound up living in one for 4 months in transition. And every communist society does have its dictator. And this one was the owner of the property who essentially was buying friends by starting a intentional community where everybody was equal, but he was king, and he would watch everybody with his binoculars from the hill and make sure everybody was good. And one day he comes down, and I've accidentally thrown away a Natural Home magazine, of all things, and not put it in with recycling in my sorting process. Drives down in his Prius and busts me for that. So I love that story because it couldn't – oh, the same guy who's replacing his oak floors with bamboo because it's more sustainable. Just a little misguided eco-Nazi. Back to a little bit more about my personal history, because it segues so nicely into some of these issues I'm talking about. After living, after camping out in my own backyard for 5 years, I had met this surfer girl. Oddly enough, meeting a surfer girl in Iowa. It's actually illegal to surf after 8 p.m. in Iowa, so I guess it makes some sense somehow. But she, of course, insisted that we live in on the coast where there are waves to surf on. And so because she got to choose the coast and eliminate everything in the middle, I got to choose which coast. So I chose the sharkiest, coldest coast, like the northwest, Sonoma County in this case, and which happens to be the most beautiful. That's why I chose it. I didn't really want her to get eaten by great whites. But we... I was really afraid of what I'd heard about land prices out there, and particularly afraid that we'd have to live on the street for a while. So we built an even smaller house that was light enough that I could parallel park it by hand on the street so we could live anywhere comfortably, reasonably comfortably, as if, even by my standards, this is a bit small for two people. But we went out there anyway, California. Turns out, we get out there and park this house in front of Whole Foods, and 20 minutes after soliciting for a place to rent some property, somebody's backyard or whatnot, a woman came up to us just 20 minutes later and said, would you please live in my redwoods, my 400-acre redwoods for free? I'm gone all week. I just come back some weekends from the city, and I just want somebody to be there. So all of our fears were allayed. But having to live on the street, we lived next to a creek in the redwood forest, and so I only lived in this for like a year because I rebuilt the 8x12. Aside from that, the fiance surfer girl turned out to be a lesbian, so that also took care of that end of things. And it's not true what CBS News said about her. We got rid of the she had to move out. She left because the house was too small. That's what was said, but that's the media for you. Worse things have been said. This is just a picture of the inside of that space. Oh, and then it used to be so easy telling my story. It's like, I'm Jay Schaefer. I've lived in houses the size of a closet for almost a dozen years now. Now I have to add on that I lived with a lesbian, then I got married 3 years ago, and then we had a baby. Actually, this is our son. He's actually 7 years old. We bind him so that we can live in a small space, just like the Japanese foot thing. And he's a good kid. He's very he knows how to hack it really well. That's the 500 square foot house that we had to buy because we had a baby and another baby's coming, and I'm not going to live with three people in a house of that size, the 100 square footer, even though some people do that. All over the world, people are doing that kind of stuff. It does help that we make a little bedroom outside for the child, and he sleeps in a box in the backyard. Now, we're actually going to have, once we get this new baby, I do have plans for them as soon as they get old enough to learn how to build a tiny house. I'll teach them, and they can have their own tiny houses in the backyard. We'll have like we'll have Napoleon Complex right there on this small city lot. Oh, just to prove to you guys that I'm not completely insane and think that everybody should live in 100 square feet, I do design these houses intended for families, like with two or three bedrooms, and they can be as big as 800 or 900 square feet. So I am not opposed to people living in big spaces as long as the spaces are being used well. When I drive through the suburbs, I like to imagine there are 20 people living in every house. This is just another one of my larger designs. It's good to finally get some pictures back from people who have built our houses, because we only build the really tiny ones on wheels, and I have to Photoshop a lot of other stuff. So it's a lot easier when people just send photos. One thing I learned while I was up in Toronto just 4 days ago doing a lecture up there is that... Well, it wasn't even there. It was in Toledo. I confused those because I have a mild form of dyslexia, actually. And so we wound up doing a lecture in Toronto and Toledo because I had thought they were the same thing in my head for a second there. And anyway, long story short, in Toledo, just last night, I learned that I really prefer doing a lecture where I'm being interviewed, kind of like City Arts and Lectures. That's the way they did it last night. It worked out really well. So I don't want to spend very much time on the formal side of my presentation today. I want to do it like I did last night with this guy is on stage interviewing me, and it was really cool because I didn't have to think. I just like made up stuff as we went along. So I'm only going to show you a few more slides that are in the formal presentation before I start the slideshow rolling just of pretty pictures. And start asking for questions. And if you don't have questions, I'll make up questions for you, but I'm sure some people will have questions. Steve is always full of questions and answers. So before we do that, I just want to say this, in this newly complicated story, I mean, I guess simplification can get complicated because now, you know, I sold the tiny house on wheels because there's this other way to get around minimum size standards or mandatory consumption laws, which is if you build under 120 square feet, sometimes it's a little different than that depending on where you live. If you build under a certain square footage, and usually you'd call it a garden shed or something, but you can do that without a permit. So I built my next house under 120 square feet, and it doesn't have to be on wheels, and I built it as a little shell so I could slide this bathroom component in the door and this kitchen component in the door. So I'm just storing my bathroom and kitchen furnishings in this shell. And oddly enough, the county seems to be into it. They're like, I guess I didn't realize the county supervisor drives by my house like every day. And I talked to him for the first time ever just like last week. And he's like, I love what you're doing. It's like, wow, this is better than I thought. I think this might be the world's smallest bathtub. I hope so, because when Steve sat in it to test it out for a tall person, he got stuck. So I think we're going to have the small, the medium, and the large bathtub. But it's about 2.5 feet deep, so it'll come up to my shoulders in water. And it actually acts as a sink as well. You know, when you're designing small spaces, it turns out every inch really counts a lot. So when I could combine a sink and a shower and a bathtub, I got really excited. The shower is a shower because this is an IKEA faucet where the faucet pulls out like on this hose thing, and so you can shower. So I'm very proud of this, even though it does get big people stuck in it. That's just a shot into my tiny current house. That is, I say it's in my backyard. I got to turn that around and say the what I call the bunkhouse. The big house is in my front yard. That's the way I should state it. In any case, my family, we all eat in the 500 square footer and we all sleep in the 500 square footer, but I spend most of my waking time in this house because I go insane if I don't have my private space. And if I have to actually imagine taking care of 500 square feet, which isn't that much, but I like to keep things very simple in my life. That's the rest of that bathroom. That's looking back towards the front door. That's a light. I'm sure you probably could tell. I will try to see if I can start the slideshow here. Let's see. If I go to this, then I go to slideshow. It'll pretend like it's the beginning of the lecture by presenting the title of the lecture. But this should go on for a while. And now, for the real star of the presentation, you guys. Are there any questions or comments about tiny houses? Yes.
I'm actually thinking about building a tiny house with my boyfriend, and I've talked to the county about it, and actually they're in Georgia, which is middle of nowhere, and they're actually pretty understanding about the zoning, but they're concerned about like bathroom fixtures and things like that, and how to hook up to water, and like how to have reasonable size bathroom code laws about heating and bathrooms and things like that. How have you gotten around that?
Yeah, that's the sticky part when it comes to building a structure of less than 120 square feet, for example. You can do that, but you can't. Once again, it's just like the Airstream trailer or the first house, for that matter. You can't necessarily live in that house, and then you have to call it camping, and then you have to. Then I have to say that I am storing my bathroom and my kitchen in my shed. Maybe they can go with some kind of renaming of these things, or. Yeah. Usually they'll work with you, and it's good to be on their good side, but if it all comes down to it, you could just threaten them with political pressure by...
They don't care if you're a girl or a Georgia.
Right, like the newspaper is going
to
change...
Oh, you want to be a hippie?
That's
fine. Those are where they have
hippies. Right. Yeah, you're screwed. Usually if you're in town and you say... Oh, I mean, if they find out the newspaper is printing a story about how Joe at the printing... or the building department isn't allowing for sustainable housing, Joe changes his mind pretty quickly, although it all varies. I would just go in with brownies and money. Yeah. If I'm understanding the question right, I do feel like every house I design for a family includes a private space for every intended occupant, because I really think that makes a small space feel so much bigger. It's like once you get people out of your face, it's like, wow, this closet feels great now. So that's the way I would go. In fact, I am serious that I'd have my kids build their own tiny houses in the backyard. I don't know where to draw the line. I mean, the most efficient thing is to have people who are sociable and can live in a small space without having a bunch of a cluster of houses, you know. But I'm actually not that way. Like most Americans, I like my little freestanding thing. But I think the key to cohabiting with folks may just be that balance between community and privacy. Is that the answer you're looking for?
So when Harry Potter was shoved in the closet under the stairs.
I thought, did anybody else think that would be kind of a cool bedroom? I thought it was fine. And that Hobbit house in the Lord of the Rings when the Gandalf comes in and has to stoop, I love that house. Let's go back there and we'll get around to everybody. We have lots of time, by the way. We're only halfway through this thing.
So in Austin, they're doing a lot of the, people are really making Airstreams and building in their backyards and
Yeah.
So, had you talked to him about camping in it, or
Well, I've probably talked to the housing and zoning departments more than most folks would about a very small structure. Because when I go in there, they say, why are you asking us so many questions? Just do like everybody else and don't talk about this. You know, it's like, don't ask, don't tell policy. Because it does get sticky. I think politically and just on a personal level, an ethical level, a lot of those people aren't really dumb. Although I have talked to some really stupid ones. But a lot of those people are actually savvy and understand sustainability and all that and recognize the error in their past ways of creating suburbs and whatnot. So they don't, unfortunately, they're saddled with these antiquated codes established by the housing and insurance industries, and they're probably as, some of them are as eager to see ways through as you are. That said, I don't know, it's all going to depend on the particulars of that department and the individual and what they had for breakfast. So best case scenario, just don't even mention it, I think. That's what I would do. I'm going to go here first, and then I'll go back there again. Here first.
No problem. I live in a place where there's millions of people living in little tiny living spaces, and it's called New York City. Ah. And how come that this is kind of like charming and hip, but you know, when I talked to my dad about his childhood in a tenement in Brooklyn, it was just awful, right?
Yeah.
And eight kids. So what's the difference? Do you know what I mean? It's like is this just like a nice label because it all looks.
I think that's part of it, because actually...
What do you think of apartments, I guess, is what I'm also saying. You don't sound like you want to live in one.
No, I lived in New York City for 2 years, and I agree that it's not... I felt like I was in tenement housing.
Yeah.
And I think it has a lot to do with design. It has everything to do with design. Like, you can be in a McMansion and feel cramped if they don't design it well. There may be bottlenecks and whatnot. So if you really design it to meet the needs that are really going on in the house or the living space, I think it's fine. But the problem is that most of our houses these days aren't even designed. They're basically just like conglomeration of parts prescribed by a marketing firm because bay windows are selling well this year, so let's put five of those things on that thing and add some square footage, even if the square footage doesn't really serve any purpose or isn't designed well. So it's all about creating well-designed spaces, and I think a space feels better when you sense that everything is necessary and everything's scaled properly. Like, as long as you can only take up, I keep doing this because my baby taught me how to do that. Actually, he does a lot of this. But also because I was thinking, you know, I can only take up 12 square feet at a time. Even the largest of us can do about that. So as long as you can design that 12 square feet at a time right, then all the rest is just perception. And, the streets of New York drive me insane. It's like walking around today here over in the convention center and at that line drove me kind of crazy because it's not quite designed for the density that it's holding that day. Yeah.
I guess, would you think that there's a chance to make that whole issue? Because in the overall picture for land use, it's nice to have people all kind of vertically stacked up. So do you think there's a chance to make that as charming and as appealing as this?
I think she may have something to say about it.
I think it's really about, both as he says, the design and the quality of the space. So if you have, like, a space that's awkward, it needs to be bigger. If you have a space that's ugly and it's poorly constructed, you're not going to want to be there. If you look at these houses, the slides here, they're
Oops.
Very, very good quality construction, nice interior. You want to touch them. You want to be near them. If you're in, like, you know, Harry Potter's closet,
exactly. I will pay you that $20 afterwards for saying my houses are cool. Let's go to you three, but you first on the left, since I'm leading left. You with the black shirt. Oh, you with the badge on, right here. Yeah. Yeah, you. The one looking around like who? Yeah.
When you're designing for space utilization.
No, it was you.
No,
it was you.
Okay. When you're designing for sort of small space utilization, how much are you able to steal from boat and RV design, and how much do you have to reinvent for housing?
It doesn't seem like any idea I've ever had was my own, and whenever I think it's my own, later I'm like, oh my gosh, that was done like a gazillion years ago, 1,000 times. So, and yet there are new combinations. And I was just over in Toronto last week. They had Resource Furniture, which you can go to resourcefurniture.com. It's like all transformer furniture. Beds turn into desks. Desks turn into vibrating beds. It's really cool. But so there are new ways to apply everything, and it's always a new combination. So, but I think always looking back at the past helps a lot, especially when it comes to small spaces, because in the past, people lived that way all the time, and they were really smart about it. Now I'm going to go to you behind his head. Well, every man has his price. I don't do much consulting because once I started consulting on a broad level, you start getting these people who are like, oh, could you just fit a jacuzzi in the 100 square feet plus the pool table? And people just don't, because that first step of deciding what's truly necessary to your happiness is the hardest one, and people don't do that first. I think there should be another consultant first, or you look like a smart woman, so I might consult you. But as far as organizing my own stuff, I just, once it's on paper, I can forget about it, you know. And literally, I just draw stuff on grid paper and then use a lot of eraser and then tuck it away. But then some of the archetypes stick. So most of my stuff is, a lot of my stuff is plagiarizing itself, you know. It's plagiarizing vernacular architecture, taking all those very simple forms of the past, but also once I get some idea for what really works, then it's just like, I don't know much, but I know how much space your knees need when you sit on a toilet, so I store that away. You right down there, yes, right there. No, yeah, you. Uh-huh. Well, first of all, I hate people, so that's not much of a problem.
That might be the wrong question.
No, I actually, Steve was there the day I had the biggest party in my house, which was just, he and his wife and me and my wife ordered pizza. The pizza man was very freaked out when he got there, too, but it's actually, you know, I have four chairs, and I pull out a fold-out table, and then I figure I don't like having more than four people at a time myself. And if I did, I would just build a larger dining area and get a smaller desk, since my desk is huge per square foot. So I think you can accommodate that sort of thing. If you like guests, you might have to get a slightly smaller house or get a tent as a guest room. You know, just hand people the tent.
It's more just a gathering of nerds every week.
Yeah. Well, with the money you save on rent or mortgage, you can just rent out the whole Holiday Inn, you know?
Yeah.
I'm kind of working my way around. I'm just going to go to you because I know you're here in the orangish, reddish stuff.
Okay, fantastic. I have two questions. One, you've got such great body of work. How do you find that?
Thanks for asking. I think this was the conference where they said don't be too commercial, but as long as you're asking, tumbleweedhouses.com. www.tumbleweedhouses.com. I didn't even mention my company name until just that moment. Oh, thanks. You'll get your $20 too.
And then the second question is, you seem pretty proud of the multi-use sink tub. Are there particular design elements that you found are more important to be very particular about in a small space? And what are those?
Yeah, there's some universal things that it seems like almost everybody needs to be happy, like a roof that doesn't leak. That's actually something a lot of architects, like celebrity architects, don't pay attention to. Like a bathtub or a shower, when it has something to bathe in is usually nice. Although I always did like the plastic bag hanging in the tree. That works really well. And mostly paying attention to what some folks call anthropometrics or just ergonomics. What it takes for a person to feel comfortable in a space as far as dimensions go. I mean, if you're designing a house for yourself, you can just totally design it around your own needs. I spent a lot of time hanging out in bathrooms, public bathroom stalls for a while. Like, could this be a kitchen? It feels good. So it's really just how, very intuitive. Does this feel okay? Does this feel small? You can get a little refrigerator box, or you can sit underneath a table. Does 29 inches really feel like a tall enough sleeping loft? So I think the most important part is just making sure it really does feel good in an everyday way. If I'm getting your question right, sometimes I divert. Okay, good. Thank you. Yeah, you first, and I'll go. I haven't even talked to you people. Yeah, I'll go over there soon.
I'm just curious. I'm from Australia, so this question may be a bit different. But one of the things that I'm noticing in Australian cities is that small block sizes are disappearing. You know, it's used to some of the blocks get bigger to accommodate bigger houses and whatever.
Uh-huh.
You don't necessarily get some of the efficiencies associated with small house size if you've got to put it on a giant block of land somewhere on the edge of the city, you know, divide space in that way. I'm just curious whether you, how you've thought about that relationship between the form of the size of the city itself or the town itself, where you put your small houses. Are they all rustic cabins, or how do you deal with that side of things?
I think I know what you're saying, and I love the idea of infill, like going as close to downtown as possible, taking an old lot that's not being used, and then just building 100 houses on it. It would be really cool. An apartment building works even more efficiently, but not everybody wants to live in the apartment building. And I didn't answer that question earlier. Yes, I don't like apartments because I used to live next to a crack dealer with a gun, and you just never quite know who's on the other side of the wall unless you really do your research, and I just like my privacy. But long story short, as dense as possible without feeling crowded is always the way I like to go with like locating the positioning of houses and all.
Like this row here, for example.
Yeah.
How are they tight? Like, is that a separate block of land that everyone lives on, or does everyone own the community together, or how do you manage that? Sort of
it depends on how you zone it, but like for a trailer park, for example, it's one ownership to begin with, but you can go in and ask for, once people live there, you can go in and everybody can buy their own little parcel of it. So there are different ways. I prefer ownership over rental because rental properties are never quite cared for as much as the other properties, because if you're renting, it's not yours. If it's your rental, then you're thinking the tenants are going to trash it and all. So I think everybody should own their own little parcel, ideally. Or at least co-op stuff. Okay, I'm going to go back here before I go to you. What are you first? I don't know who's first. We have a line. Actually, that's not a bad idea. Well, I'm sorry, guys. We are getting to you. But I'm just going to go to her because I like her. She's cute.
It's actually kind of piggybacking on the kids, but so you said that there's a lot of minimums for building. Some sizes and stuff, but if you build multiple,
there are so many ways to do it. I mean, I've thought of, I know I'm not the only one who's thought of it, but you could have, you could plop a little house or two on the rooftop of a apartment building in New York City. Or you could just do it in so many ways. I think of a water world. I never saw the movie, but I imagine just like a floating village so nobody has to pay property tax. So there are a lot of ways to do it, yeah. I'm going to go back to you in the far corner.
Do you see tiny houses as a catalyst for broader social change? And if so, do you see any evidence of that? Like, people start growing more of their own food?
Yeah. Well, I know that my friend Greg Johnson, who was my first customer, lost 80 pounds within a year after moving in, so he's like the Jared of tiny houses. But that's somewhat more personal, but still a social health issue. I like to imagine And I do think it's true that it's part of a larger social movement in the sense that it's the anti-consumption idea. So Occupy, for example, we were approached by Occupy people, and they wanted one of our tiny houses in on Wall Street. And we tried to get one in there, but they wouldn't. The cops wouldn't let the tiny house in there, and it just got complicated after that. But apparently, you know when the cops won't let you display an anti-consumption icon that you're on the right track. That's the way I feel about it anyway. So, yeah, totally connected with the zeitgeist around anti-consumerism. And for that matter, good consumerism. So when you are going to consume stuff, it's very intentional. I have to go over here now.
I'm just curious what sort of challenges you had with sewer and water when you were in your initial house that was on a trailer. Obviously, you didn't have access to a septic system. Or what did you? How did you handle some of those things?
I've had the most primitive plumbing and electrical systems there ever were. My current, by the way, my current plumbing, like that shower bathtub thing, is not even hooked up because the county doesn't want me to hook up, in answer to another question, to the utilities. And even though hundreds of people in my county are in this situation, I'm so out about it that and I have the 500 square footer with the shower in it. But in my first house, I just had this gravity-fed system where I would go out and collect water from a spigot, set it in the tank above my head after heating it on the cook stove. So it was completely, like, primitive. And so going to the gym, I went to the gym all the time. It was just much easier. And my electrical system has been a power strip, like the one under this desk. And that acts as a fuse box because it'll shut down if there's a power surge. And then I just have my four extension cords leading off that. They aren't in the walls, but they are tucked under the cabinets and under the shelves. So I'm sure any fire marshal would be appalled. And I would not offer this as advice, but rather as my personal experience. You there.
Hi. Yeah, so I'm very interested in the idea of tiny houses. We've got a position and have a lot of stuff. And that requires kind of like a recording space of some kind. So I'm trying to figure out a way that I can integrate these two houses.
Two houses, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I never draw the line at... I do know this. When I was an artist, which is a ridiculous statement because everybody is, but I was producing a lot of sculptural stuff, and then it got architectural because I started getting into these one-person sacred spaces, like little Shinto shrines and things, and that turned into houses. I had to rethink things because I had all this stuff I was storing. So maybe what I would say is take up the ukulele, because I pared down to really tiny works on paper at one point. But, you know, it's not necessary to get rid of everything. If playing the tuba really makes you happy, then make enough space for a recording studio and the tuba. And I think it's just a matter of not going beyond, just knowing what does really make you happy and not going beyond that. So I wouldn't shame you for having 200 square feet, no, or whatever it takes. Yeah. I was going for you first. Yeah, you back there.
Do people often secretly have a storage unit that they rent out?
Yeah, I have a 5,000 square foot storage unit. No, I don't. I think having some storage in a separate storage shed is actually useful because, you know, your bicycle doesn't need to be heated and it doesn't need to look out the window. So it's a different kind of space that's not expensive and consumptive. But I would feel guilty if I actually had something. I do feel guilty because now we have the 800 square foot house we're fixing up to rent out, in which we throw all of my garbage and building materials for Tumbleweed Tiny House Company. And so I have a 800 square foot storage shed, and apparently people are like goldfish. Because even though I could live in 100 square feet with a 20 square foot storage shed for a while, now I'm just filling it with crap. So yes, there are such things do happen. What's your question?
So is it better if you need more space to go with a larger house or like another tiny house?
Well, ideally a larger house because, you know, it's more efficient to share walls. It's more efficient for heat loss and for space. But it really depends on what makes you happy, too. Because like I said, I have a hard time sharing walls with loud crack addicts. So, and just make sure you don't live next door to the crack addict, and you'll probably be okay. Yes?
Hi, so we live in a fairly little house in London that was built in the Victorian era. And they weren't very good at making themselves happy. And they certainly weren't good at ergonomics. Have you adapted many sort of older spaces for sort of quote-unquote modern living? Have you got any advice on what we can do to sort of make our tiny house a little bit more efficient?
Yes, buy my book. More. No, I have all my design principles in there, even though, you know, I never had design principles when I was designing until I had to write something about it. But that's when you're like trying to articulate it. And it's just a matter of organizing the space, of course. And a lot of it, oh, it's just so, I guess I could teach my whole workshop in 5 minutes, but I won't. I'll just say there are certain things that work really well. I think that part of the book might be online. Just find my book and buy it. That's all I have to say. Or go online and find the organizing principles, and that explains how to make a space feel spacious.
I mean, the only other thing I'll just say really quickly that has been really fascinating for me about this as an English person is that all these houses are detached, and we don't have small detached houses because they just don't exist. Everyone that lives in a small house lives in a terraced house.
I know. People in other countries. Well, we do sell quite a few houses over there, six of them. So, what? Oh, 6 minutes left. Thanks. Well, we've sold a few houses over on that side of the pond in both the continent and in England. And it's weird because we sell them in Japan. It's like, I thought Japan would be way ahead of me. I'm very honored that Japanese people would buy my tiny houses. Since I was originally inspired by a trip to Tokyo, and I spent 4 hours just looking at the bathroom, marveling at how they fit it all in. And to your point, I think in other countries, other cultures, they're so much more advanced than our primitive people here, in the sense that, you know, we are still, and I am included, I'm like caught up in this idea of the freestanding house, even though it's way better both societally, like in many ways, environmentally, societally, to have these connected units. In fact, my old Spanish girlfriend, she was really depressed when she moved to the States because the houses are so far apart. So it's also, we get so caught up in our idea of home, and far be it from me to try to change Americans' ideas of home beyond just like, I live in 100 square feet, and I don't want to go too much beyond that at this point. Ideally, shared walls and all is good, though. Yeah. Yes?
Are there tumbleweed tiny house communities in the United States?
Not yet. There's a couple building that bought land and is going to build one on Whidbey Island right outside of Seattle. And I'm going to build this Napoleon complex, of course. And it'll be really cool, I think.
I've been noticing some of the slides.
You know, this is actually, this slideshow, it's actually just a folder I picked out arbitrarily, somewhat arbitrarily from my IA photo, and it's just OPH, other people's houses. Yeah, let's just take one more question.
I'm just curious about costs and how low you can go with some of these houses.
You can go as low as you want. It's hard for me to know where to draw the line. I always go as high as I can. I'm like, 100 square feet. And then I don't draw any budget for it because I'm like, if you're going to build 100 square feet, you might as well just put your all into it. Like, just put in what you want, whatever's nice. But you could build a 100 square foot house for like, well, just go to Lowe's and buy one of those sheds and put some rigid foam board in the inside and a space heater and you're ready to go. So it really can, you know, you could buy a refrigerator box and insulate it. So it really is, whenever I start trying to design really affordable housing, I'm always like, I get confused because I'm like, I used to live in the back of a truck. I used to live outside in a very small tent. It's like, where do I draw the line? Because somebody in some sort of social service is going to say, this is not livable. But as many of us in this room know who have gone camping, most things are livable, you know? That's all I have to say, folks. I just want to thank you for coming, and hope you have a good time at this South by Southwest.